Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Workers at all of Kellogg's U.S. cereal plants are striking and call on you to make sure there's no snap, crackle, and pop at your breakfast table as they call for a consumer boycott of all Kellogg's cereals. The white men in their business suits at Kellogg's cereal plants are telling the workers to be damned as to your pay and benefits. In fact, they want givebacks from the workers' health care, holiday, and vacation pay, and to reduce their retirement benefits. And new workers that are hired, predominantly those of people of color, will be starting at a lower pay grade and with less benefits.
So while the company says get back, the workers are saying fight back and walking the picket line. Indeed, in 15-degree weather in Nebraska, and Kellogg has begun to send them pink slips. But the workers are holding firm and asking you, the consumer, to boycott all Kellogg's cereals. No, no snap, crackle, and pop on your table to stop Kellogg's war on the workers.
Dan Osborne, 18-year worker from Omaha, Nebraska's Kellogg's plant, it's good to have you with us.
The proposals from Kellogg's company initially was a permanent two-tier wage system. We currently have 30% of our union body on the lower tier. They get $12 an hour less. They have higher insurance premiums, less vacation, and less vacation pay. That is the main reason why we chose to strike, and that the company was not willing to move off of that two-tier system. What they're also trying to do is take away our cost of living adjustment. That's based off of an index, and every time a contract gets ratified, so about every 4 years, we get $1.80 raise. That's our only source of wage increases, and they were trying to remove that language as well.
How many plants are included in this strike?
There's my plant in Omaha, Nebraska, which is the biggest plant. We run 27 different cereal products. We have Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Memphis, Tennessee, and Battle Creek, Michigan. And there's 1,400 souls.
So just to be clear, they want to move out of the two-tier and make one tier, but it would be the lower tier. Is that correct? All the people who are currently there at some point will.
Yep, that was our main reason for strike. As soon as somebody quits, fires, or retires, the new employee that gets hired will be on that lower tier, and they'll stay on the lower tier. So basically through attrition, that would end the livable wages and benefits that we now enjoy.
Sure.
And is it affected also?
In 2015, we took concessions in a contract. Cereal sales were down. Kellogg's was threatening to close two of our North American plants if we did not ratify that contract. That's when the two-tier system got implemented, and anybody hired on after 2015 no longer received pensions.
Talk about who works at these plants, what the average length of time of these workers being there is. Who are they? What kind of work do they do?
There's a wide variety of people in the plant. I have 18 years in as a mechanic. You have maintenance personnel, operators who run machines, produce and package the cereal. That's the team. Well, you have warehouse workers as well, and you have sanitation employees. The work can be grueling. It's a very fast-paced, dangerous environment. I've had a hand injury in 2015. I had 5 surgeries on it. It got caught in some rotating equipment. That's something we deal with every day. We try to stay vigilant with safety. It is a hazardous environment. The people there are all very hardworking, working-class people. The lower-tier employees actually have a 40% turnover rate. They're having a hard time retaining employees because of the wages and benefits. That creates a training issue. The upper tier employees, such as myself, when I got hired in 2004, this was a career job. I knew once I got hired on there, I thought that I would spend my career with Kellogg's and retire and live happily ever after, you know, the American dream. That's what's under threat right now, I believe, is the American dream, especially for people who didn't take the route of going to a university and having $100,000 in student debt when they graduated. This has been a good job. It's been a staple job in these four communities for 75 years. That's certainly under threat right now.
What does it mean in practical terms to set up a two-tier system, one of which actually erodes the benefits that should have inured to long-term workers such as yourself, what that actually does to people?
It definitely creates a division. That's what the two-tier system, which started in the 80s, that's what it was designed to be, a union buster. We work 7 days a week, mostly through the pandemic. We work 12 hours every day. Meanwhile, the company's making record profit through this time. But I'm working side by side with somebody making $12 an hour or less, and we're doing the same job. You could see how naturally that's going to create a division between the workforce. It's very frustrating, especially for the lower tier employee. They feel like we sold them down the river in 2015 with this contract. But I explained the threat of the plant closures if we didn't ratify that. It doesn't create a division where people are actually getting in fistfights or anything like that, but it's certainly damaging to the workforce.
And the lower-tiered workers, they're mostly African-American now. I believe it's 90% African-American, and the long-term workers are 70% white. The lower-tiered workers are making much less and have less protections than the white workers.
By protection, we afford them the same opportunity with the grievance procedures, protection from malicious bosses, what unions do for people in the workplace. We offer the exact same protection. Otherwise, it's mostly a wage and benefit issue. They're definitely treated differently by the upper tier employees too, because, you know, when you're hiring for $12 an hour or less, you're going to get some people who aren't near as qualified to be doing that job in the first place. They lowered their standards of hiring when they lowered their wages. You didn't have to have 5 years manufacturing experience like you used to. If you had a GED, you were qualified to work there. When I got hired on, there was 6 openings and 600 people applied. Now there's 6 openings. They have a hard time getting enough applicants for these jobs, because if you're getting hired on at Kellogg's at $19 an hour, which the lower tier is, I just got offered a job at Taco Bell for $17 an hour. So why would you want to go work shift work, second and third shift, forced overtime, 12 hours, when you could go do that for $2 an hour less?
It would also seem to foster terrible racial divisions. If that's the way it's coming out, that now the company is hiring African Americans who will be subjected to lesser benefits and wages and so on, what a terrible mm-hmm. thing to do to the working class and any kind of continuity or union solidarity, right?
Exactly. That's why we're on strike. We're on strike for those lower tier employees. The company's last proposals, I didn't really stand to lose anything. I'm on strike not only for those lower tier employees to get the same wages and benefits that I enjoy, but I'm also on strike for our future, especially my children. If they decided like me, they wanted to forego college. I went to 3 years of college and then my wife got pregnant, so I need to get into the workforce and get some insurance for my family. If my children want to work there someday, I want to ensure that it's going to be a job that they can enjoy those wages and benefits as well.
And in terms of COVID, did the company take sufficient precautions with regard to COVID?
They did when we were there. I can tell you they are not taking the same precautions. They brought in temporary workers, scab workers, to run these production lines. They're not being very successful. I think they're about 20% capacity of what we were running when we were there. But I watch them come in on the buses, and there's no way they're taking the same COVID protocols. And
Dan? Yeah, we can't hear you at all now.
Yeah, let me try to call you right back on the landline.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah, you guys hear me better now?
Can hear you better now.
What COVID did for not just us, but millions of Americans, made them rethink their employment. They're calling it the Great Resignation. 4.5 million people walked off their job in August of last year. Kellogg's deemed us heroes. They called us essential workers or frontline workers. During COVID, we worked 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, never shut their factories down. Meanwhile, they were making record profits. They call you a hero, and then they kind of want to treat you like a zero when it comes time for contract. They want to take things away from us. They're making $21 billion. The CEO has taken a 20% increase in his compensation. He went from $9.7 million in 2020 to $11.7 million in 2021. We feel as workers, they made that money off of our back. You know, we just want our small sliver of the pie.
By the way, you can't not say the name of the CEO. Who are we talking about that made those, that
yeah,
kind of profit?
Our CEO, his name is Steve Cahillane. And as I don't have the names of the top five executives, but they're all ranging from $3 million to $6 million, and they also took increases in their compensations.
And moving on from there, there's a lot of forced overtime now. I imagine there always has been, but it's been extenuated and amplified by this dispute. Can you talk about that?
In 2019, leading up to our contract that expired in 2020, Kellogg's did not hire one person. This was designed by them so that they would have to work more overtime in hopes that Kellogg's would get more of a favorable contract if we were burned out. In 2020, that is when this contract actually expired. We were set to go on strike then. We chose not to, and instead we chose to extend the contract for a year. Fast forward to 2021. The global pandemic hits, that's when, you know, we were working all those hours. So what it did is we were already short employees from not hiring in 2019. We had 39 people retire in 2020 because they were afraid of losing their health insurance at that time. And with the pandemic, we were down over 100 people at one time. So what that means to the worker that goes to work every day, you have to cover for the vacancies. For me, for example, I work the 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. shift. They can come up to me at any time and say, Dan, I need you to stay over till 7 o'clock to cover a second shift vacancy. But then I'll work till 7 o'clock. Then they can come up to me any time before 7 o'clock and say, Dan, I need you to come in at 3 a.m. and cover for a night shift vacancy. They're both four-hour increments, right? Those are the kind of hours that we were working through COVID, and it was constant. It was every day. Like I said, we've always done, you know, quite a bit of overtime, but it was certainly exacerbated during the pandemic.
Another reason for that also wasn't that if they moved people up, if they hired new people, they would have to move some of the people out of the second shift into the first shift, and they didn't want to do that. Is that correct?
Usually a new hire person goes straight to the off shifts. And then the more seniority you have, you know, that's usually when you get your day shift bid, because everybody wants to work the day shift. It's easier on your home life and your sleep life. So the new people always start off on the off shifts. Like I mentioned before, there's a 40% turnover rate. These guys would come in, you know, get trained on their jobs, and within a month they're already leaving. So the vacancy is right back there again. So we, you know, this lower tier transitional program, they call it, it's not working out. It's just keeping that overtime constant. Keep in mind that we are not complaining about the hours that we work. We're used to the long hours. That is not anything that has to do with these contract negotiations. But I think it's just a good point that I would like people to know, because, you know, we work these hours and we feel like that's always been the trade-off. We work the long hours. We make your cereal. You make the money. And we would like livable wages and benefits in return. It's a pretty simple equation.
We recently spoke to workers at Nabisco who were going through similar kind of considerations. And in Nabisco, they were also threatening and indeed had opened up a plant in Mexico. I wonder if the workers at Kellogg are facing some of that same kind of competition, threat, et cetera, do what we want, or we go to Mexico. And how do you understand that these companies are making record profits?
Sure.
And really what the workers are asking for is almost to just keep on keeping on, yet they're being treated so miserably. I mean,
that's absolutely right. During our contract negotiations, Larry Elliott, as one of the company negotiators, and he threatened that they would, if we kept up with our outlandish proposals, that they would move these North American jobs down to Mexico. For myself, and I would hope that the American people would draw a hard line in the sand with our manufactured food being manufactured in Mexico, you know, where there is absolutely no FDA oversight, there's no OSHA oversight. We just recently had that onion scare with the salmonellas. They recalled onions, and you know, all they have to do with the onions is rinse off the dirt. If we're not even supposed to drink the water in Mexico, How do they expect to manufacture food down there safely? This is where the American people really have to step in. You know, I think I've said it before, you know, we can be okay with our shoes and our clothes coming from overseas or anywhere, but, you know, when it comes to what we put inside of our bodies, that's a whole other game there.
Do there need to be broader kind of strategies and attacks against these CEOs who live high on the hog, to put it mildly, record-breaking profits for all of these companies, definitely Nabisco, definitely Kellogg itself, and workers are asking to survive and live with some measure of dignity and decency in an inflation economy? What the heck do we not understand? Or does the working class need to do to make people clear that these class divisions are just really unacceptable?
Sure. What we need to do is support unions, you know, and you ask, you know, how could I support a union? Well, right now, during this labor dispute, the best way to do that would be to boycott Kellogg's, right? I mean, it's a very simple thing to do when you're at a grocery store and you have a decision to make. Buy the Cheerios, or I don't even know the other brands. I've worked at Kellogg's so long, I've never bought anything other than Kellogg's cereal. But it's very simple to do, and that's how you're going to make them feel it. I wanted to touch a little bit on the CEO. 50 years ago, or maybe a little bit longer, CEOs worked their way up from the mailroom, right? They were one of us at some point, and through hard work and intelligence, they worked their way up to that level. Today's CEOs have a bigger disconnect from that type of reality because they come from Ivy League schools and they come from money, and that's how they get into those positions and get to sit on the boards of these big companies. As far as support goes, you could support striking union members through donations or simply, like I said, the easiest thing is a boycott.
Talk about what this strike has meant for both the surrounding community and the families, because I think people are rather casual about strikes. And so, well, people are getting strike pay, et cetera, maybe a little uncomfortable to be walking a picket line, but talk about what really happens psychologically and actually and economically to the family structure, to the community, when people are forced onto strike.
So far, we've had one member commit suicide during this strike. And that just goes to show you how much this changes your life immediately. You know, you wake up one morning doing the same thing you've done for the last 20 years, getting up and going to work, and now company has cut off our medical benefits. We can't go to the doctors. We haven't received wages in 37 days. People are starting to fall behind on rent and mortgages, are worried about how you're going to pay for your groceries and take your kid to the doctor. We had a guy whose daughter just had an open heart surgery. That's something that, you know, it had to be done, but, you know, that guy's going to have medical hardships, probably paying that off for the rest of his life. We're scared, without a doubt. We still have resolution inside of us. Even as the weather turns, it was 15 degrees and snowy and windy here in Omaha today, but we're still standing the lines because we know and we believe in what we're trying to do here. And I said, it's not just about the 480 people in Omaha or the 1,400 people around the country at Kellogg's. This is about all American workers. This momentum that we have and this movement, this is going global. I've received phone calls from Japanese newspapers. I've done interviews in Paris, France, and India, and Argentina. And hopefully this momentum keeps gaining traction and people stand up for what they believe in, and that's a living wage and decent benefits.
And the politicians, do they want to know what it's about? I'm talking not only about the politicians in your local area, but in the U.S. Senate and the representatives. And what the hell is Biden doing?
As far as I know, Biden has done nothing for our cause. Bernie Sanders donated $20,000 for our relief fund. And we had Congressman Don Bacon come out to the picket line the other day, which is huge. You know, this is showing this is becoming a bipartisan issue. We're hoping politically this gains traction. Obviously, our local senators drafted a letter to Steve Cahillane in support of us and to try to reach a resolution. Fell on deaf ears, of course, but we definitely would like to see more high-level politicians step up and show support for these hardworking people.
What do you think needs to be done to strengthen unions now, build their membership, and to deal with the laws that have been so restrictive restrictive to unions that make it very, very hard for them to get better contracts, that make it hard for them to build their membership.
You hit the nail on the head. The PRO Act needs to be passed. It's labor-friendly legislation that basically makes it easier for people to form a union in their workplace. Amazon tried to unionize, and they ran into a lot of roadblocks that they shouldn't have had to run into. Lawmakers and legislation and make it easier to form unions and maintain unions. The second part to that is we've had people reach out to our local union already and say, hey, we see what you guys are doing. I think this is shedding light on the subject for a lot of people that didn't even know about unions. So they want to know how they can unionize their shops and receive better wages and benefits. After all the dust settles and more unions and more strikes become successful, people are definitely going to be paying way more attention and want to get in on it as well.
And you've done something that a lot of unions who are even on strike haven't done, called for a boycott. How did you make that decision? How do people help? What is your website? How do they contact you?
My website is bctgm50g.com.
Do that one more time.
That?
Sure. It's bctgm50g.com. From that website, you can donate to our local union here through PayPal or GoFundMe. There's also information and there's contact information if anybody ever wanted to contact me, and even if they just want to talk about it and have me explain things to them, I'll talk to anybody about it because this is something I truly believe in. It helps people in their daily lives through better wages and benefits and better working conditions as well. You know, unions aren't just about money. We're also about a good, safe, healthy work environment while you're at work.
Tell us what we should be boycotting, why that's so helpful to the strikers.
Kellogg's, their cereal business, does 40% of their total business. Kellogg's is a giant conglomerate. They own Pringles, the Kashi line. It's very large. But to make it easy on people, I'd say just boycott their cereal. That's the easiest thing to do. If you wanted to take it a little bit further.
So this is just the cereal division that is actually on strike, right?
Yes.
Shouldn't all of the workers be called out to stand shoulder to shoulder with their fellow workers?
That would be beautiful, but the reality is the majority of Kellogg's manufacturing that is non-union. Can't ask non-union shops to stand in solidarity with you.
What percentage of the workers there would you say are actually non-union who work in Kellogg?
Kellogg's is a corporation?
Yeah.
That's an excellent question, and I do not know the answer to that. I would say it's pretty large. Kellogg's a global company. They're South America, Europe, Africa, Australia. They're everywhere. So that's a difficult question to answer.
So you're saying that winning this strike is hugely important, both for the individual workers to get rid of this two-tier system and all the discrimination that carries with it, and to deal with the wages and benefits and dignity on the job. But it also would seem to have enormous implications for what must ultimately happen, which is the complete unionization of all of the Kellogg workers, right?
That would be an ideal world for us, definitely, and for people around the country to get better wages and benefits. You know, we know how much the CEOs and executives make. We know how much Kellogg's makes. You know, they profited close to $5 billion in 2020. That's profit. They can afford to pay people better, for sure. If and when we win this and we get a fair and equitable contract, the whole country is going to see that happen, and I think start something else that we can move forward and use in the future for the good of all people.
Are there other dirty tactics that are affecting people? What else is this company doing that's really cruel and vicious and dirty?
Yeah, they started sending out termination letters firing all of us.
What? How can they even do that? Isn't that illegal?
We have a lawyer here that we're working on the legality of that.
Letters, did it go to everybody?
Not everybody has received one yet. We first heard of it about 2 days ago. People started calling up to the office saying, hey, I got this termination letter. What does this mean? And so we're struggling right now to figure out exactly what that does mean. I told you we had a suicide, and Kellogg's did not pay out his death benefits to his spouse and children. The kind of people we're dealing with. We had that same Larry Elliott in our 2020 negotiations that I talked about threatening the jobs to go down to Mexico. He told us in negotiations that he is willing to spend $10 million a day to keep us out on the street if need be. And I can tell you right now, they're close to that, and we're on day 37, so that's $370 million. Even if it's close to that figure, that's what they're spending to keep us out standing in the 15-degree weather in the cold, when if they would have just gave us their contract in 4 years, they would have spent, they said they would have spent $60 million at our proposals at face value.
Boycott Kellogg's. Boycott Kellogg's.
Tell us precisely what we should be boycotting, Dan, and then once again, what else we can do to support our fellow workers.
Boycott Kellogg's cereal. Kellogg's also makes the Kashi brand cereal, like the Kashi Cinnamon Harvest. That's where I would start. That's the easiest thing to do, is just to boycott Kellogg's cereal, you know, because that's what we make and that's what we want to continue to make in the future. And then also you could go to the website bctgm50g.com. And you can click on the Donate Here link if you wanted to donate any kind of money that you could. That's going to go towards supporting our picketers out on the line and hopefully helping them with their Thanksgiving dinners and Christmas if we're still out there if need be.
We support you fully and comprehensively. And I would say there is another thing that we might encourage people to do, and that is to write to, tell us again the name of the Kellogg CEO who has the audacity at a negotiation to tell you what he's willing to spend to break the back of the union. What's his name?
Steve K. Helaine. The Kellogg's headquarters is in Battle Creek, Michigan. Google Kellogg's headquarters. It comes right up.
And tell them that we're boycotting, and local residents might want to set up their own picket line in relationship to the headquarters of the CEO and or the living accommodations. If people aren't allowed who do the work to live decently and are now being threatened with their jobs, well, the CEO needs to have a little bit of pressure put on him as to what he's doing to destroy people's
lives.
Yeah,
I can tell you he just bought a mansion in the heart of Chicago for $4.6 million.
Our Chicago sisters and brothers, the man deserves a visit.
Right.
Contact your local politician, Congress, to get on the ball and support the Kellogg workers.
Our motto here is one day longer and one day stronger.
Boycott all Kellogg cereals and support the striking Kellogg workers. Dan Osborne, stay strong. I believe the workers will win the war launched against them by Kellogg. This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Educate, agitate, and organize for the empowerment of we the people, for another world is possible.